Random House Audiobooks presents The Seven Spiritual Laws for Parents, Guiding Your Children to Success and Fulfillment by Deepak Chopra, read for you by the author.
The Seven Spiritual Laws for Parents. After my book, The Seven Spiritual Laws of Success, was published, the response was immediate and very beautiful. Thousands of people who read the book began to practice and incorporate in their daily lives the principles that nature uses to create everything in material existence. In time, I received requests from many parents. Their requests echoed a single theme. I have benefited from living these spiritual laws. It was a struggle to break the destructive habits that I grew up with. I don't want my children to have to go through the same pain of having to change. How can I make sure that doesn't happen? This audio is meant to answer these requests, extending seven spiritual laws specifically to parents. My approach is founded on the belief that every parent needs tools to raise children with a true understanding of the workings of nature and consciousness. With all its worship of material success, there is a profound truth that society has missed. Success depends on who you are, not what you do. Being or essence or spirit, call it by any name you want, lies at the source of all achievement in life. If we examine the oldest traditions of human wisdom, we find teachings of certain principles by which spirit unfolds from eternal being into everyday life. Now more than ever, in this age of violence and confusion, there is an urgent need for parents to take on the role of spiritual teachers to their children. Understanding these laws is not just a way to help a few people. It is vital for our society and even for our civilization. We owe it to the world, I believe, to ensure that as many children as possible grow up knowing what spiritual reality is. We can all be forgiven our lack of knowledge about spirit, so we can teach ourselves the seven spiritual laws with the same enthusiasm as we teach our children. The deepest desire in a parent's life is to see one's child achieve success in life. And yet, how many of us realize that the most direct way to success is through spirit? We teach our children how to survive, how to defend themselves, how to compete, how to persist. Although believing in God is often considered a good thing, spirit has traditionally been set apart from success in daily life. Many people mistakenly believe that success is material, that it can be measured in money, prestige, or an abundance of possessions. The success we want our children to achieve has many non-material facets as well. It includes the ability to love and have compassion, to feel joy and spread it to others, knowing that your life serves a purpose, and finally, a sense of connection to the creative power of the universe. If the meaning of your life unfolds to you every day, in simplicity, wonder, and surprise, you have achieved success. Every child's ability to feel wonder in the face of everyday existence is the surest proof we have that nature wants us to be successful. It is in our own nature to respond to life with joy. One of the limitations of material success is that people become desperately afraid that their success will come to an end. Spiritually, there is no need for such fear. Success is a journey whose end we never reach. It is both the eternal quest and the eternal unfolding. The material things of this world can certainly make the journey more fun, but they are only a small part of what makes the journey worth traveling. Spiritual success means many concrete things: energy, delight, enthusiasm, good health, trusted friends, the freedom to do the kind of work we love to do, happy and beautiful families, and peace of mind. The seeds of God are inside us. When we make the journey of spirit, we water these seeds of divinity. In time, the flowers of God bloom within and around us, and we begin to witness and know the miracle of the divine wherever we go. Our responsibility as parents, therefore, is to place our children firmly on the journey of spirit. This is the best we can do to ensure their success in life, better than money, a secure home, and even love and affection. When we practice spiritual laws, we put ourselves in harmony with nature. Any other way of living leads to strain and struggle. Success achieved on the basis of struggle may bring good things to us, but the inner fulfillment we seek from these things will be lacking. The seven spiritual laws are as follows. First law, the law of pure potentiality. The source of all creation is pure consciousness, pure potentiality, seeking expression from the unmanifest to the manifest. Second law, the law of giving. In our willingness to give that which we seek, we keep the abundance of the universe circulating in our lives. Third law, the law of karma. When we choose action that brings happiness and success to others, the fruit of our karma is happiness and success. Fourth law, the law of least effort. Nature's intelligence functions with effortless ease, with carefreeness, harmony, and love. When we harness these forces, we create success with the same effortless ease. Fifth law, the law of intention and desire. Inherent in every intention and desire is the mechanics for its fulfillment. In the field of pure potentiality, intention and desire have infinite organizing power. Sixth law, the law of detachment. In our willingness to step into the unknown, the field of all possibilities, we surrender ourselves to the creative mind that orchestrates the dance of the universe. Seventh law, the law of dharma. When we blend our unique talent with service to others, we experience the ecstasy and exaltation of our own spirit, which is the ultimate goal of all goals. The seven spiritual laws put a person in touch with the mechanics of nature. When you consciously align your life with spiritual law, you are asking the universe to support you with success and abundance. This is the key to becoming aware of your own being and using its infinite power. The earlier someone is taught how to live in the most harmonious and creative way, the more likely it is that all of life will bring success. This is what we are asked to pass on to our children. Every spiritual tradition contains some version of these seven laws, but they emerge in their purest form from the ancient Vedic tradition of India, which articulated them more than 5,000 years ago. The seven spiritual laws emerge from one vision, which is as follows. Human beings are made of body, mind, and spirit. Of these, spirit is primary, for it connects us to the source of everything, the eternal field of consciousness. The more connected we are, the more we will enjoy the abundance of the universe, which has been organized to fulfill our wishes and desires. Only in a state of disconnection do we suffer and struggle. The divine intention is for every human being to enjoy unlimited success. Success, therefore, is supremely natural. The language of the seven spiritual laws has to be different when spoken to a child, less abstract. The same laws can be phrased so that even a young child is able to carry them around in his mind and heart. First law, everything is possible. Second law, if you want to get something, give it. Third law, when you make a choice, you change the future. Fourth law, don't say no, go with the flow. Fifth law, every time you wish or want, you plant a seed. Sixth law, enjoy the journey. Seventh law, you are here for a reason. A child raised with spiritual skills will understand the source of creativity. She will be able to practice non-judgment, acceptance, and truth, which are the most invaluable skills for dealing with other people. And she will be free of the crippling fear and anxiety about the meaning of life, that is the secret dry rot inside the hearts of most adults. The deepest nurturing you can give your child is spiritual nurturing. I'm not talking about forcing hard and fast rules on your children, the way we teach them to be good or risk being punished. Each of the 7 spiritual laws should be conveyed not as rules or rigid precepts, but as your own way of looking at life. As a parent, you will teach much more effectively by who you are, not what you say. Every child has a spiritual life already, but not every child grows up to know that this is true. Spirit must be cultivated. It must be nourished and encouraged. If it is, then a child's innocent spirit grows up to be strong enough to withstand the harsh realities of an often unspiritual world. Without nourishment, the silence and peace of spirit can be drowned out by other, harsher voices. With spirit, we are all children of the cosmos. Without it, we are all orphaned and set adrift. Let's take an example. The 7th law says, you are here for a reason. A child's reason for being here can be put in simple, everyday terms, such as, how did I make a difference today? What talent did I uncover? What came to me? A gift, a lesson, a beautiful experience that made me feel special. What did I do to make someone else feel special? These are all simple variations on the basic question, what am I about? A child who has not learned to look for meaning in simple ways will one day have to find a purpose in life under much more difficult circumstances. Usually we postpone the search until our late teens or early 20s, which unfortunately coincides with the most turbulent stage of personal development. However, a child who was taught from the age of 3 or 4, you are here for a reason, would begin to look for the meaning of life as a natural thing. Why am I here is the most joyful exploration a person can undertake, and we do our children an immense favor by presenting it as such. A child who paid attention to this one principle would have a far richer life than countless adults for whom spirit and God remain forever locked in a world of abstraction. As parents, we are tempted to distance ourselves from childhood. We do this by seeming to know more about life, when in fact, we have just experienced more. We have gotten good at knowing the rules and avoiding punishment, at masking our weakness with a show of strength. There is no better recipe for destroying a child's innocence than to destroy our own. In the eyes of spirit, everyone is innocent. You are new made every day. There is only one spiritual difference between the innocence of children and the innocence of grown-ups. We are innocent with understanding. And that is what we are meant to impart while retaining the pure, fresh, pristine quality that comes with true knowledge. From the day your baby is born, you are a teacher of spirit. If you create an atmosphere of trust, openness, non-judgment, and acceptance, those qualities will be absorbed as the qualities of spirit. Look upon spirituality as a skill in living, since that is what it is. I believe in imparting these skills as early as possible by whatever means a child can understand. Infant, 0 to 1 year. Keywords, love, affection, attention. An infant is pure spiritual gold. Cherishing her innocence is the way to find the path back to our own. Spiritual bonding with your infant comes through touching, holding, providing security from harm, playing, and giving attention. Without these primitive responses from the environment, the human organism cannot flourish. It will languish and wither as surely as a flower deprived of sunlight. Toddler, 1 to 2 years. Keywords, freedom, encouragement, and respect. This is the stage in which the child is first gaining its ego, a conviction of I am. The toddler is testing detachment from the parent for the first time. It is up to the parent to communicate a spiritual lesson, that the world is safe. To feel safe as an adult means that you were not conditioned by fear. You were encouraged to expand without limit, to value freedom despite the occasional bump. Falling down is not the same as failing. Being hurt is not the same as deciding that the world is dangerous. If a child connects being hurt with being bad, weak, unable to cope, or being constantly surrounded by threat, no room is left inside for inner spiritual growth. For without a sense of safety, spirit remains out of reach. One is forever trying simply to feel secure in this world, and yet that security cannot be achieved without overcoming the imprints of early childhood. Preschool, 2 to 4 years. Keywords, deserving, exploring, approving. This stage is all about building a child's sense of self-esteem. It is identified with tasks and challenges. With toilet training and learning to feed herself, a toddler begins to realize that I am can expand to I can. What makes the twos terrible is that the newly born ego surges with power in an undisciplined way. Without being put into balance, the power hunger of a preschooler will run into grief because their experience is largely the illusion of power. A ranting 2-year-old is still a very tiny, vulnerable, unformed person. We allow the illusion of power to exist because we want her to grow up a strong, capable person who feels up to any challenge that comes along. This sense of self-esteem won't develop if the feeling of being powerful is shut down or repressed at this stage. Kindergarten, early primary school, 5 to 8 years. Keywords, giving, sharing, non-judgment, acceptance, truth. The critical aspect of this stage is that abstract concepts are now ready to be assimilated. The concrete mind of the infant now blossoms into a capacity for accepting realities beyond I come first. Giving is how we show that we empathize with needs outside ourselves. Giving, in spiritual terms, means I give to you without loss because you're part of me. A young child cannot fully grasp this idea, but she can feel the warmth that comes from reaching to include another person in their world. The same holds for telling the truth. When a young child is taught that telling the truth will result in a good feeling, the first step has been taken to realizing that truth has a spiritual quality. If you foster the attitude of tell the truth or you'll be in trouble, you have taught something spiritually false. A child who's tempted to lie is under the influence of fear. If truth gets associated with this fear, then the mind tries to get better at lying. What results is that the child is forced to act better than he feels he actually is. Learning to act out what others demand is a sure recipe for spiritual destruction. Your child must feel that this is what I myself want to do. Older children, 9 to 12 years. Keywords, independent judgment, discrimination, insight. For many parents, this stage is the most enjoyable because their child develops personality and independence. A 10-year-old child is capable of wisdom, and for the first time, that most delicate of gifts, personal insight, comes about. The child can see and judge through her own eyes. This is the first stage where anything like a spiritual law can be grasped conceptually. By age 10, abstract reasoning takes an independent turn, and the true teacher is now experience, not an authority figure. early teens, 13 to 15 years. Keywords, self-awareness, experimentation, responsibility. Childhood ends with early adolescence, traditionally a trying and difficult time. For the child, innocence suddenly runs into puberty and the arrival of needs that parents can no longer fill. For parents, the realization dawns that they must let go of their child and trust that she is capable of dealing with a world of responsibility and pressure. What is critical here is that by now the lessons of childhood have borne either sweet or bitter fruit. The child who can go forth imprinted with genuine spiritual knowledge will reflect pride and trust on his parents' part. The child who stumbles into confusion, reckless experimentation, and peer pressure is likewise reflecting the hidden confusion of his upbringing. Experimentation is a natural part of the transition from childhood, but it doesn't have to be reckless and destructive. The issue is whether the child has an inner self that can be used as a guide. If you have taught your child to heed her own silence, there is no peril in letting her go out into the world. It is a joyful experience, if occasionally a nervous one, to watch her grow in self-awareness by experimenting with the vast array of choices life has to offer. I think we'd all agree that the old practice of teaching through punishment and reprimand is to be avoided. Setting yourself up as a punitive authority figure only emphasizes moral dilemmas you have not solved for yourself. Children quickly detect the gap between what we say as parents and how we behave. They may learn to obey us out of fear of punishment, but at the emotional level, they intuit that a parent who has to use threats and coercion is not a model of what good should mean. Yet times do arise when it is tempting to punish children out of sheer exasperation and frustration. If we examine these moments closely, we realize that we are using punishment to resolve issues that aren't resolved in our own hearts. Do we really believe it is possible to be truly good all the time? Is evil a force we feel helpless before, uncertain if goodness can even stand up to it, much less triumph? The frailties of our own spiritual life come out in the way we decide to parent. Being a spiritual teacher goes beyond how you behave. You are here to impart real truths about the nature of life. The easiest way to teach the meaning of spirit is to create an atmosphere in which spirit is breathed in as love. To have a baby is such an act of grace that every parent wants to return the gift many times over. This is an impulse I have felt myself. I could summon the confidence to write this because my own two children allowed me to learn the seven spiritual laws through them. From very early on in their lives, my wife and I found that we were instinctively following certain practices that only later gelled into principles. We taught our children to take spirit as a reality, to believe in an infinite source of love that held them dearly. This was our working definition of God. We put no pressure on them to achieve conventional success. This was our way of telling them that the universe cherished them for who they are, not for what they do. We never felt the need to punish them, although we let our children know very honestly when we were disappointed, angry, or hurt. This was our way of teaching by reflection instead of rules. We always remembered that our children were gifts from the universe, and let them know that we felt that way. We didn't project our own expectations on them. We never felt the need to compare them with anyone else. This was our way of making them feel complete within themselves. We told them that they had gifts that could change other people's lives. We also told them that they could change and create anything they wanted in their own lives. Finally, we encouraged their dreams. This was our way of telling our children to trust their own desires, the royal road to the inner world itself. without being perfect parents, and of course slipping many times from our ideals, my wife and I found a way to raise our children by inspiration. This is an opportunity to express my deep-felt gratitude to my wife Rita, whose instinct for love and kindness always led the way for me. All these practices can be boiled down to one precept. Every child needs as much mature love as you can give. What makes love mature and not just adult is the spiritual intention behind it. The birth of a baby is the first act of grace that launches us as teachers of spirit. The second is the grace of love, which guides our intention in the years to come. Love lifts us above our individual fallibility, and in doing that, it teaches our children the deepest, most valuable lessons. Starting from a very early age, you can integrate the 7 spiritual laws into the family routine. Remember that children mainly learn from what you are, not what you say. I will outline a day-by-day program for the family to follow. Each day of the week is devoted to a single law. In our family, we spend some time each day discussing the meaning of each law, and we agree to look for examples of how each law worked for us that day. Each day's routine also contains 3 activities that help to focus your attention on the law for that day. On Sunday, the 3 activities are silent meditation, communion with nature, and the practice of non-judgment. Everyone in the family agrees to spend a little time on these activities, hopefully time shared with the whole family. These activities don't take up more than a few minutes. It can take a split second to notice something beautiful. It takes no time at all to stop judging others as right or wrong.
Sunday is the day of pure potentiality.
Today we tell our children, everything is possible, no matter what. On Sunday we agree as parents to do the following things with our children. Leading them in a few minutes of silent meditation. Inspiring them to appreciate the beauty and wonder of nature. Showing them the hidden possibilities in familiar situations. Within everyone is the seed of creativity that can grow in any direction. By connecting with our source, we activate all possibilities in daily life. In practice, this means that we all take time to experience the silent field of pure awareness. Children need to learn that silence is the home of the spirit. Being in touch with the field of all possibilities means that you are self-referred, meaning that you look within for guidance. Sunday is a good day to ground the whole week on such beliefs. With children, using the vocabulary of the heart is often more effective than abstract words like potentiality. Listen to your heart knows, is a good beginning, along with phrases like, in your heart, anything is possible. You should also make clear that the heart is a spiritual center. It contains silence and wisdom. No one is a success who doesn't feel successful in his heart of hearts. The 3 activities for Sunday are meditation, appreciation of nature's wonder, and learning to see new possibilities in familiar situations. For the adults, there should be a period of silent meditation lasting 15 to 20 minutes in the morning and afternoon. Young children can be nurtured in this practice gradually. From about the age of 6 or 7, it is appropriate to begin to teach your child that a few minutes of being alone and quiet is good every day. Wait for relaxed opportunities to invite a child to sit still with you and breathe quietly with eyes closed. Ask her to feel the breath as it softly goes in and out, and visualize the breath as a soft blue-white light going in and out. 5 minutes of this simple breathing exercise is enough at the outset. Increase to 15 minutes by age 10 to 12. Don't be impatient if your children don't take to sitting still every time you invite them to. The example of your own enjoyment will draw your child into the practice naturally. Inner silence promotes clarity of mind. It makes us value our inner world. It trains us to go inside to the source of peace and inspiration when we are faced with problems and challenges. When you take time to go out into a natural setting, walking in the park, hiking, picnicking, infinite creativity can be seen in every tiny flower. Children love to be inspired by natural wonders, and you can support the experience by pointing out how expanded and free nature makes us feel. The sense of "I can do anything" wells up naturally when you contemplate the vast open sky or the glories of a towering mountain range. The vistas of the natural world make us feel that we can be at one with infinity. It's important to teach a child to reach for something new in a well-known situation. Insight and perceptiveness, freedom from judgment, a willingness to be open. Success hinges on all these things, and you will be teaching all of them whenever you pose the simple question, "A way of looking at this." There always is, because without noticing it, each of us imposes limits on the way we perceive the world. Our mind says, "I don't like it. It's wrong, or bad, or boring. Nothing can be done about it." This is a good day to catch yourself and your children when you make one of these statements out loud. When you notice an instance, shift your perception. Ask your child to look for some new quality in herself or someone else. Ask for a stretch of imagination. Invite fantasy, experimentation, openness. With older children, once they are ready for more abstract concepts, it's extremely valuable to teach non-judgment. Non-judgment means that we don't label other people and their ways right or wrong. It is the first step towards the mature attitudes of acceptance, non-violence, and compassion for life. Non-judgment isn't easy to communicate to young children. Even a simple statement like, "Don't say your little brother is wrong," becomes confusing, since any time you use the word "don't" or "stop" or "no," you are passing your own judgments. It's far better to ask each child to find one good thing or one lovable thing in another child. Make that the task for the day, and then discuss it at dinner. If you teach acceptance and tolerance, imparting the belief that everyone is doing the best they can and should be seen in that light, not as we expect them to behave, then you will be doing a great deal to teach them the first law, the law of pure potentiality, which says everything is possible no matter what.
Monday is the day of giving.
Today we tell our children, if you want to get something, give it. Monday we agree as parents to do the following things with our children. Inviting them to give one thing to someone else in the family. Inspiring them to receive graciously. Sharing a brief ritual of gratitude for life's gifts. On this day we pay attention to ways in which we can give to others. Because there's no giving without receiving, we complete the cycle by paying attention to that as well. The whole cycle of giving is thus seen as constant movement, the circulation of everything in creation. It has always been true that to get love, you must first give it, and God always gives all things from love. When we give, we show our understanding of the truth that Spirit is the giver of all. Except for the very youngest children, Monday is a school day, so we discuss the law of giving at breakfast and dinner. Same holds true for all the other laws that fall on weekdays. The three activities listed for Monday involve giving to someone else in the family, receiving graciously, and performing a brief ritual of gratitude. Make it a practice as a family to have every member give something to someone else, remembering to give a smile, a word of encouragement, or help with a chore is natural and simple. It is also what is likely to last. For simple giving within the home cultures the desire to serve. Selfishness results from a young child not yet understanding how things actually work. To a very young child, letting go of a toy is the same as losing it permanently. People who forget how to give have reverted back to a very primitive state of consciousness. They believe that if they let go of something, it is gone forever. They forget that we receive anything only because the universe wants us to experience its inner significance for ourselves. In every getting, there is a spiritual lesson. You should concentrate with your child on how it feels to give. Even a 3 or 4 year old can feel how nice it is to give a friend one piece of candy if she has two. With the oldest children, age 12 and above, they are old enough to learn to give when it is not so easy, when you are tempted to withhold or to be selfish. Learning to give praise to the winner of a game you've just lost, treat an outsider with kindness and include them in your clique, and to offer help with tact and lack of self-importance are all appropriate lessons for older children. To receive graciously is an art that cannot be faked. We receive ungraciously out of pride, feeling we don't need anyone's help or handouts. These are ego reactions, and there is no need to have them once you realize that the giver is never the giver, just as the receiver is never the receiver. Both stand in for the Spirit. To receive from another person is a symbol of receiving from God. With younger children, this isn't a problem. They love to receive and have no difficulty lighting up with gratitude. At later ages, the onset of ego needs and drives clouds the issue somewhat. If attention is paid from an early age, the natural warmth and happiness of receiving will not fade. Such feelings can be supported by teaching that all things come from the universal source. Every time we receive, we are giving a glimpse of divine love, love happens to be acting through at any moment. A small ritual of gratitude shared by the whole family is a recognition of the gift of life. You might hold hands at the dinner table and give thanks, not just for the food on the table, but for what has been given that day. Have each family member mention one thing, such as, "I'm thankful for the beautiful butterfly I saw. I'm thankful we are all well and happy," etc. It takes awareness to remember that life is a gift. Showing joy and enthusiasm for the Spirit is no less than how the Spirit regards you.
Tuesday is the day of karma.
Today we tell our children, when you make a choice, you change the future. Tuesday, we agree as parents to do the following things with our children. Talking about some choice they made today. Showing them how our future was changed by a past choice we made. Explaining right and wrong in terms of how choices feel. Children need to know that each choice they make leads to results of a kind that will be good or bad for them. Every choice changes the future. Karma is usually interpreted as bringing rewards for good action and punishment for bad. Parents translate this into a system of rewards and punishment without teaching the really crucial thing. Nature herself handles such matters. The workings of life can be deep and hidden, and effects can follow causes on many levels. It is not up to us to judge what result an action deserves, but to observe closely how the cause and effect universe works, then to model our behavior accordingly. Karma is not fatalism. It doesn't dictate that people have to suffer. What it does dictate is that free will is absolute. Karma then involves witnessing how choices get made, evaluating their outcome, and listening to your heart. All of these strategies can be communicated to children when we teach them how to make choices. Choice is critical to success in life, for success is just a name for the desirable results we wish to achieve through our actions. The activities listed for Tuesday all center on talking about choices, how we make them, how they change our lives, what results to expect. Talk to your children about one choice they made today. Whatever the choice, making a new friend, spending money on something, begin to explore what happens when choices are made. When a choice is brought up, gently explore it by asking such questions as, how did you feel about that? What do you think will happen? Choice is intimately personal, and the best way to use your influence is to make your child into a sensitive, aware choice maker. Every child wants more than he gets, and our task is to show him that choice isn't an endless stream of willful demands. To choose love and truth is very deep and brings good rewards. To choose selfishness is shallow and brings little reward. If we had omniscient vision at all levels, as God does, we would certainly accept any so-called negative result because we would see that nothing better could result. The fact that every action leads to the best result possible is a law known as grace. Grace is God's loving organization of time and space. It allows us free will to do anything we want, and the results of our actions are brought back at the perfect time to learn from what we chose. In other words, anything that happens to us reflects a loving guardianship of our well-being. By observing how cause and effect work, a child sees that life is a learning process on many levels. It's helpful as children grow older to tell them stories about the choices that affected your life. When you talk about your choices, don't voice them in terms of regrets. I did this wrong, so I'm going to make sure you never do the same, may be well intended, but your offspring are going to try everything. That is inevitable.